I have average revenue of 2.8 million and EBITDA of 29%. Said differently, $836,000. You guys are killing it.
It actually is up. So that was the 2024 data. 2025's actually went up a little bit.
Really?
That's the good news. So the AUVs are actually climbing in this brand, and we're just getting better. And the brand will continue to get better.
All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. In a world where kids are glued to screens, families are starved for connection, and loneliness is rising across every generation, the brands that win aren't just selling products or tickets. They're creating space, a space to move, to laugh, to belong. If you're only focused on transactions, you're missing the point. Because most powerful brands in the world don't just sell. They become a third place. Not home, not work, but that sacred third space where people go, not because they have to, but because they want to. Starbucks figured this out. Disney figured this out. And today's guest is doing it inside a trampoline park. Michael Mudd is the CEO of Brand One, and he's helping develop Sky Zone Trampoline Park, a brand that's redefining what it means to play, to celebrate, and to connect in real life. With over 300 global locations and more than 40 million guest visits per year, that's more than the NBA and the NFL combined. Sky Zone isn't just in the entertainment business. It's in the community business. To manage the scale and risk that comes with this kind of volume, SkyZone has implemented a master insurance policy, helping franchisees mitigate exposure and stay protected. And the best part is, the numbers speak for themselves. According to their latest Item 19 earnings claim, SkyZone's corporate-owned locations averaged over $3.8 million in revenue, while franchisee-owned locations generated an average of $836,000 in EBITDA. This is a must-watch episode. All right, let's dive in. I have to ask, Michael, you have helped scale everything from frozen yogurt empires to service brands. Sky Zone is a really different beast. This is a multi-million dollar build. You have operational complexities. You got safety liabilities. What was it about Sky Zone that made you and the team say, this is the next brand we're going to help scale? Like, what? How did you get here?
All right. Well, I mean, to be fully transparent with you, one, thank you for the kind comments. Number two, though, Sky Zone is the magic. There's magic in it. Why I was so excited is it's the experience that Sky Zone has for the communities they serve. So when you walk into a Sky Zone, it's just like everybody's excited. You've got parents that are generally interacting with their children in meaningful ways without devices. And if you look around, nobody's got a phone.
That's right.
And to me, that's really special. I'm a very active person and I'm a very active parent. My daughter and I have been jumping in Sky Zone since she was crawling. And I'm not the kind of parent that plays with her in these parks. So it's a way that we can connect and we can engage in that. Like, I can really build relationships with my family in a really fun way that everybody has a blast, and she can do her birthday party. And there's just, it's an awesome business model. I generally think it's the antidote to tech. I think we need as people to just put our phones down and just have free play with our kids. And as kids get older, they're this venue. So Sky Zone's a 30,000 square foot entertainment venue. And if you go back 20 years, because they were founded in 2004 out of LA, interesting founder story, but they've evolved into this gigantic, they're the largest indoor entertainment company in the United States. And then obviously we peel back the economics and we look at, well, does it financially make sense? And absolutely. But if you look at it, it makes sense because as an investor, because this is more of a, I'd say it's more of a sophisticated business model. So it's really good for an investor candidate. And investors need the operation to support itself with it. Like, it needs GMs and redundancy and management. And this brand affords for that. So it sets up really well for somebody who wants an executive business model that they can scale, grow. I mean, as an example, we have franchisees that operate in 25 states, Cliff. Wow. So it's not like you have to be at the park every day, but you do need to make sure that your park is driving the right experience, because people pay a premium for experience. And that's what we are. If you think about it, it's like little Disneylands that don't have all the lines, that are more approachable with a membership model that creates recurring revenue.
What I find fascinating is that if you mention this brand to an adult, the answers are identical. How did you find out about Sky Zone? My kid was invited to a birthday party. No one answers that question differently. No adult answers that question differently. I was invited to a birthday party. Me, how did I find out about Sky Zone? I have a 16-year-old. He still goes to Sky Zone. I love the model for those reasons. I love what it gives back to the community. So what's Brand One's relationship? Obviously, you're wearing your Brand One. What's the relationship between Brand One and Sky Zone? And explain for the audience, you know, who is Brand One?
So Brand One is a franchise growth organization, Cliff, and we work with a variety of brands and really any phase of their growth cycle. So we work with, you know, enterprise brands that are looking to restart or to attract a different audience or to maybe accelerate growth and bring in, you know, better quality growth typically. We also work with emerging brands and we work with micro stage brands. So we have a collection of we have decades. So there's 300 years of franchise experience within the Brand One company. I'm a partner and a CEO of the company and really proud of it. We spent our entire lives studying the franchise business model. So I'd say what we are experts at is the franchise business model. Now that gets applied to all kinds of different things. So you could be in service, you could be in a lot of different things. But what our core competency is recruiting. We are recruiters. We look for human talent. Human talent builds brands. So our role is to go and get a fit to culture, to capital, to background, experience. We work in all kinds of ways to go find and engage with these people. So Sky Zone, we're right now on track to open 300 parks by the end of this year. We'll be at 300 strong in the brand. So it's going really well. They brought us in to really layer in incremental activity. So they wanted to get into an audience that was more sophisticated, that was going to lay out kind of larger scale agreements. And they wanted to bring in like our Rolodex and our contacts to go bring those people into the system. So we got going and we've had a lot of fun. So the reason that Sky Zone is aligned with Brand One is because we can get and attract and we find these people, and then we help educate them on all the merits of the franchise program. We help them understand all the systems. We help them understand all the disclosures. We connect them to capital. We connect them to legal. We can really help them understand a brand. We're big educators. And then from there, we just allow them to make an informed decision. Mm-hmm. Now, meanwhile, Sky Zone is vetting out these candidates too. And there's a process. Like, you've got to go through asset verification. You've got to go through a background check. Like, Sky Zone isn't just letting anyone in their family. So good. I guess we work really well. I'll tell you, the respect I have for what Sky Zone has done and what they continue to do, it's just a brand that is a lot of fun to work with. I think it's contagious. If you like going to Disneyland and you see, you know, Mickey Mouse, this brand has a lot of Disney in it. It's like, it is a Magic Kingdom, but in a small footprint.
Absolutely.
So what franchisees do, if anyone's sitting and listening and thinking that, hey, Sky Zone might be a business that we want to get into, what I would say to you is it's an experiential entertainment business. It is not a service business. So if you can keep that in mind, there's a lot going on, Cliff. I can digest some things, but that's how the relationship works.
You've heard from some incredible franchise brands right here on the podcast. If you're sitting there wondering which opportunity might be the right fit for you, we're here to help. At Franosity, we offer free consulting services to aspiring small business owners just like you. We'll guide you through a focused, strategic process to help you identify the best franchise match. Call or text us at 561-277-3710. Or visit us on the web at franosity.com. That's franosity.com. We look forward to working with you. Describe the typical buyer of a Sky Zone. Net worth, liquidity. What does this investor look like? This is obviously a sophisticated, high net worth individual that's doing this deal.
Well, when you look at the family in general, I say family, like the franchise community, it's a small group. There is probably only 80 franchisees in the system, right? So one thing to think about, SkyZone itself is a park operator. They operate 130 parks of their own. So SkyZone, their corporate O&O parks, they're the largest park operator in the United States. And I mean by that, like, of indoor entertainment, they are the largest operator. The brand's really big. I mean, if you don't, it's an $800 million a year system. This is a very, very large system. So the franchise owners, like some of the early franchisees, a lot of them are like engineers and IT. There's an amazing franchise owner that I've just been a dear friend of mine at this point, a guy named Mo Zia. I'll use his name because he wouldn't care. But Mo operates, you know, he's in multiple states, in three states now. He's grown well, five parks. He came out of IT, had a windfall of that. But what happens is you're seeing a lot of internal growth. So he came on one location and then he's growing, growing, growing. And like there's a franchisee in the system at SkyZone that has 25 parks and he operates them in a lot of states. And there's a lot of big operators. So what happens is people typically come in SBA.
Okay.
And then they get bankable with the success of the first unit. And then what they start doing is they pick up conventional financing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they get private equity. There are funds behind franchisees at this point.
You could tell some of these videos I've watched. You could tell.
Yeah. A lot of like investors, like I see a lot of people from like hedge funds, people coming in that are like more investor backgrounds, finance backgrounds, banker backgrounds that love it because when you look at the economics on it, there's recurring revenue, number one. A majority, like a good amount of revenue is coming in from a membership model. And that creates predictability. You already know what you're going to do next month by what's going on in your membership model. But when you think about the way the engine works on it, this is fascinating. So a birthday party, people throw a lot of birthday parties here. There is 6 to 8 party rooms inside of a SkyZone. But what happens is people come in for a birthday party, they're going to invite, you know, let's call it 12 of their friends to come into this birthday. So they're paying a premium for the birthday party. Then they're inviting new people to come in to go experience SkyZone. And if you do it right, they become your next members. So think about tech for a minute. So if you're going to sell a tech product, you're going to offer a trial, typically like here's a free month. Mm-hmm. And they like it, then they now subscribe to it, right? So why would you pay a premium for the trial? And then now we'll convert you to a member. That's the genius of this thing. Now, when you think about a birthday party, parents are taking photos of their kids. It's almost impossible to go to a birthday without taking a photo of your kid at the birthday party or jumping and putting on a slide. We have a lot going on in this park. So what's happening, the whole thing is branded. So anytime like the guests coming into the park are now doing all the marketing for you. So franchise owners really need to get the ground game and they hire somebody for that, which what you're doing is getting out and being involved in the local chamber. You're getting out and doing fundraiser events with like any school, any youth program, everyone that's in sports or any team event, they got fundraisers. So all you're doing is hosting like in an off time, like during the week, in the evenings, you put together like an event for that sports team. And then there's a rev share back for the event.
Okay.
So they're raising funds to have fun in your park. It's a no-brainer. And what's happening is it's driving revenue into, there's also a concession inside of SkyZone. So you're really running, when you think about this, you're running an events and a party business, you're running an entertainment business, and you're running the SkyZone Cafe. So think like almost movie theater concessions in terms of simplicity, but really high margins, incremental revenue for the members that are already coming into the park.
Okay.
So for a finance person, this is a no-brainer. Yep. If you look at, we have item 19s with full financials laid out and franchisees that are incredibly happy and growing. So it's almost once you get into it and you start, if you can look into some due diligence, it's a no-brainer for a lot of people. But the investment, it's an investor model. So this isn't going to be like a service thing, but folks that get into it, they grow and scale with it. It's an interesting business from that standpoint.
I love that. I came up with 7 revenue streams. So discuss revenue streams. Where is the money?
Okay. So this is it. So the brand's been operating a long time. You should get some context and I'll answer this directly, but I think I get to give you some context. So with 20 years, the brand's really done everything, right? It started way back when it was founded by Jeff Platt, awesome guy. Him and his father, Rick, had created this business out of LA. And what they were trying to do is create a sport with trampolines. And the sport didn't take off, but they invented the indoor trampoline park. Okay. They created it at Skyzone. And it took off. So they opened another one, then they started franchising it, and they built something real special. But at that time, 80% of the park floor was trampolines. Okay. And that's evolved. So at this point, about 20% of the park floor is trampolines. And now it's really entertainment. So think like active indoor entertainment experience. It's Ninja Warrior courses. It's super slides. It's zip lines. There's so much going on. Sky Slam basketball, dodgeball. There's a lot.
Yeah.
So they're in a like what I'd say is a modern Sky Zone, because you have legacy. We have 16,000 square foot parks is the smallest we see, up to maybe 50,000 wow. square foot parks. Now, this brand sits in 40 states. We're in South Dakota. We're in like very small rural communities in West Virginia, right? We do really well in those communities. Yeah. But we also operate, like we just signed a gigantic, we had a 50,000 square foot lease that just got signed in Brooklyn. You're literally looking at the Manhattan skyscrapers from this park.
Wow.
So it operates everywhere. So the whole point is, what do you put in this footprint? So the ideal Sky Zone today, we know this from the data. The good thing about this is we have so much data yeah. that allows us that all decisions are made through data. So we looked at what does drive this business. So a 30,000 square foot park is ideal. That's the ideal footprint. Yeah. We want 16 attractions in it. We want 6 to 8 party rooms in it. So the revenue drivers, to answer your question, okay, so the party business is driving a big piece of revenue. Okay, that's going to be constantly driving in revenue and then feeding the engine to the membership model. The membership model is another revenue source that is a big one. The conversion rates are easy because when you think about the membership price is the same price as like a day jump ticket.
Okay.
So let's say you wanted to come in with your family today, you pay the same price to jump or get a membership.
Okay.
So it's easy for people to get a membership and then they retain the membership. Typically, we're seeing like retention rates of 4 to 5 months. But what's happening is it's so easy to convert to it. They carry it for the summer. So you get more revenue out of that one jump ticket. It continues now for 5 months. So anyone that's like right now understands the revenues driving, memberships are a big thing for this brand. And then we do birthday parties is a big thing. And then we also do our concessions. That's going to lay on revenue on top of this person coming through the park. That's maybe, but depends on which park you're going to, but let's call that 16% that's coming through concessions. And then one like really cool piece of data, we're one of the largest sock retailers in the United States. We sell more socks than Amazon.com as an example. So they sell a lot of socks because anyone coming into a Sky Zone has to use our trademark patented socks because they're like there's liability in That's these right. parks, and these are slip resistant socks. They have to use our socks. So we have like programs with Crocs where we have Croc. You can get a Sky Zone Croc at a Sky Zone. You can get like we do like big events with philanthropy. So we had the Children's Hospital design a sock, and then we have now that's a special edition sock that you can get at Sky Zone. And then we give money back to the philanthropy effort. So there's collectible socks. We sell a lot of socks, my friend. So that's another one that's out there. So there's multiple revenue streams, but the biggest of which and the one that we're really focused on is the membership model. Okay. That's where memberships and birthday parties, that drives a lot of revenue through our business.
That was a very comprehensive answer. I love it. That tells me a lot about the model. I love how it's evolved. 80% trampolines to now 20%. I love brands that evolve and stay ahead of it and don't get left behind. Like you said, data tells you. I love that data is being used properly to really expand the brand. And my God, you guys went from $300 million in annual sales, like system-wide sales, to $500 million. You said $800 million. You're going to be a $1 billion company.
Yeah, I think they're going to get there pretty quick. Is that like the growth right now? We've had a lot of success with growth, Cliff. We're close to being like an entirely closed system, which means like right now there's so much active growth inside of Sky Zone. They almost don't need external growth right. anymore. So as much as like I love this brand, I'll be here until they want me to stop. But I think, you know, at some point they're going to say, Michael, we don't need you anymore. Because they've almost got to the point where like they can grow internally mm-hmm. and finish out what they want to do with the brand. So I think they're in coveted air right now. I think the brand does have a lot of magic. I've been just tickled to be part of it, Cliff. Like some of these brands, like this one, it's an awesome concept.
Yeah, totally. I want to share with the audience, I find this mind-blowing. If the NFL has 17 million guests per year, the NBA has nearly 22 million guests per year, Disneyland has 28 million guests per year, Six Flags, The Great Adventure, 32 million. You guys are over 40 million guests per year. Like, what the hell? You have more attendance than the NBA, nearly the NBA. No, that's accurate. The NBA and the NFL put together, you have more attendance.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of traffic that this brand drives through, that stat, we should probably open up with that. Because as a lot of candidates looking at franchising, they want to understand the value that the brand has. And SkyZone's brand value is tremendous because they're the anchor that sits in shopping centers. Oh, you should also know that 60% of the brand goes industrial. We don't even need to be visible to the street because it's a destination event. People come to us. So when you think about, that's kind of an interesting thing because a lot of like people are mid box and small box, if you know anything about real estate, but they're big box. So like when there's a shopping center, your anchors drive traffic for like the middle and low boxes, but we drive the traffic. So when you think about it, 60% goes into, it needs to be class B industrial space because you are attracting a mom, right? She's got to be safe when she takes her kids to a birthday party. Yeah. And she's inviting 10 of her friends. So they're not going to go to class C where it's kind of seedy and like a little bit scary. So class B industrial works really well. And so does class A. But we drive the traffic. So that's the thing about it is the thing. We add a lot of door swings. Again, 40 million door swings to be exact and growing.
Wild. What's the average ticket in this business? Like we keep talking about like memberships and people coming in for a day pass. What is that number? What's the average ticket?
Well, it's usually multiple tickets that happen inside the venue. That's the interesting part. So what that means is there's a commodity price index, right? So gasoline, milk, and eggs cost more in Manhattan than what it cost in South Dakota. So what we need to do is look at the commodities. Then we basically look at our competitor set. And then we would recommend a price point that we would set for that park operation. And then the way we use Roller, it's a CRM system, which basically with that pricing tier, it sets the price throughout every little thing, concessions, memberships, ticket prices. But then what happens is somebody came in like you and I we'd say we just wanted to do a play date. We would come in there and we pay like a jump ticket, but then we'd go to concessions because anytime these kids are in this park, you're going to get a snack, right? So then they're going to get an icy. They're going to get something else. So there's more things happening, but it is an all-inclusive jump ticket. So that is one thing I'd say is a little bit unique is like we don't have like you pay extra for the zip line. You pay extra for these mechanical attractions. There's reasons behind that too. Okay. There's a whole bunch that I could clip now that I'm like 1,000 things I can tangentially go here. But I'd say on a membership model, it varies by market, but I would say on average, you're probably looking at $40, $41 to maybe $50 for the membership for the entire month. Okay. But you can come back and jump as many times as you want. It's unlimited jump for the month.
Okay.
And there's two options. So you have two options on a jump ticket and two options on a membership. It's real simple. It's like better, best. So the decisions are easy to be made. So that's a little bit what it is. The jump ticket's about 40 and the membership's about 40 per month.
Okay, got it. All right, got it. You know what else is very cool about your brand? It was in the movie, The War with Grandpa, with Robert De Niro. Did you guys do that deal? Like, do you have someone working on the YouTuber, Jules LeBlanc? Like, who's driving that? These are some smart moves.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of media impressions that the brand's getting. So like influencers, they use getting it into Hollywood production. So the brand right now is getting 2 billion impressions that they've gotten since 2018. The marketing team is very seasoned. So what they're doing is big national. There's like national initiatives and then there's local initiatives. But like from a national campaign, a lot of it's influencer, a lot of it's digital. They basically put tent pole campaigns around. There's like six big campaigns that they build into the year. It's like an annual calendar. And then they basically, franchisees do a local supplement to what's on the national tent poles.
I think it's genius. Love it. The other thing I found fascinating about this indoor trampoline park or indoor entertainment amusement is the growth rate. And I think the growth rate of 16, 17% compounded annual growth rate is very impressive and unusual. And anytime I'm on with someone with a CAGR in the teens, it's like a big time call out, right? This is a huge play. So this could clearly go into the multi-billion category. I like that. I want to get into the item seven. I wanted to understand on this Class B space. One, I want to discuss the range of investment. I see the range and I learned about the range is correlated to the size of the space. So I like how you broke that down. And again, the average you said was around 30,000 square feet. But I could purchase a location as small as 16,000 square feet. Am I understanding that right?
I mean, you could, Cliff, but it's like a modern Sky Zone. You're really going to want to park that thing in 25,000 okay. square feet to 35,000 square feet. Now, if you're in a rural market, we look at something at 16,000 square feet, but this is what happens. It's kind of fascinating. If you go too small, we should talk about risk too at some point, because we have a master insurance program that I think is worthy to talk about. But the way insurance works is you can't just, like, you're going to put less people in that the fire department actually will allow. Yeah. So what happens if you're not big enough, you hit park capacity and then you queue a line that goes outside. And that's like, that happens. We have parks that, like, in dense areas, they're too small. Even at 30,000 square feet, it's too small. They need to be bigger or they're going to leave money on the table because they don't have the capacity to handle the demand of that business. Okay. This business has a tremendous amount of demand. So the range, if you look at the full range, we do go from 16 to 50, it's 2.3 million mm-hmm. on the low end to 5.1 million on the high end. Now, the way the out of a seven lays out though, is we have three separate charts in there. And I almost take it like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. One's too soft, one's too hard, one's just right. So in other words, it's too small, too big. Yeah. This one's the right footprint. So I almost want to just share like the right footprint. This would be 27,000 to 39,000 square feet is what that chart is in item seven mm-hmm. or the estimated initial investment. And that range is 2.6 million to 4.6 million. And the majority of which though is in equipment. So you basically have attractions that you're putting into that space, which anyone that's sitting on this call knows that's a depreciation. Mm-hmm. that you're going to be able to get in there. So that's a big part of it. And then leasehold improvements is a big part of it. You should know, I guess, in full, the way this Fran represents itself is fully transparent. So we are not including TI allowance in that investment. So in other words, this is going to be the gross investment. And then what'll happen is the landlord would typically give a TI contribution to the construction. And then from there, it's going to add, that's going to come after you've made that investment that I just spoke about.
That's right.
Okay. So that doesn't include the TI contribution the landlord's making.
Can you, for the audience, can you touch on the TI, which is tenant improvement money? You're going to make capital improvements to the space. You approach the landlord and say, hey, I'm going to put a ton of money into this Class B warehouse industrial space. Would you like to kick in some capital? What are you seeing on averages? And of course, we're not changing the item seven. Expect to come out of pocket, whatever the item seven states, as a little icing on the deal, you may get some TI money.
So the TIs are significant because we are making, like, these are, we don't list it in the disclosures. So Cliff, number one, I don't want to get to a point where I'm saying a number that's not disclosed, but that's easily valid. You can validate with that with our franchise owners very effectively. But it's significant. And why that's significant is because they're taking a space that has no HVAC potentially, mm-hmm. and no, like, it's a raw space that we now are putting HVAC, plumbing, we're doing all the build out. So they are going to contribute substantially because it's their real estate and we're improving their real estate. So the construction cost that I'm giving you here, it's involved in improving the landlord's real estate. Now, another thing that you might ask is, why don't I own the real estate? Mm-hmm. That does happen. The franchisee that I just told you about, I opened up with this group from McDonald's. He came in to Dallas and he bought his first location. Like, he was looking to buy and to lease. So I would always say location's critical, get the right site. But if you have an opportunity to buy it, maybe own it yourself and then you become landlord. Now, landlord is interesting, Cliff, because now you have a business and you have two entities, mm-hmm. the business and the real estate. So you could grow the business and then you can sell the business and keep the real estate. And now that's your retirement account.
Okay.
So the reason this particular group liked it is McDonald's made all their money in real estate, right, Cliff? But that's the franchisor made the money in the real estate. He knows the game and he's like, hold on. So there are, it's less than average because most of our franchisees are looking to grow quick. I'll just tell you, the group in Sky Zone is moving and the internal franchisees are growing. So they're like, it usually takes longer to buy the real estate. So they are like, I don't care. I just want to open the park because the EBITDA is crazy on this business. Yeah. So they're like, I would rather just get the EBITDA. No matter if I buy or lease it, it makes no difference.
So by now, most people have listened to at least several episodes, understand you just can't make up a number, but people can go out and validate with existing franchisees and say, did you get TI money? Yes. How many square feet do you have? 32,000 square feet. What did the landlord contribute? They gave me $20 a square foot, $40, whatever they say, right? And this is what needed to happen for me to get that money. I got the money after I got certificate of occupancy. Got it. You know, whatever. I took a rent reduction instead. Like, how did you take that benefit? So there's all sorts of ways to negotiate these deals. So that takes us, so we discussed the item seven. We got the range. I love the Goldilocks because you're right. Yeah, we offer the 16,000, but why would you do that? And maybe there's a market for it with a really low population. There's a place for everything, but the averages are going to be in that 30,000 range. So I like that. And I also believe that your item 19 breaks down the earnings potential, or let's say EBITDA or gross revenue, based upon the size. So there's clearly a direct correlation between better performing locations, more rooms for birthday parties, right? More space for all these activities and so on. Why don't we talk a little bit about that, the item 19. I have average revenue of $2.8 million and EBITDA of 29%. Said differently, $836,000. Like, what the hell? You guys are killing it.
It actually is up. So that was the 2024 data. 2025's actually went up a little bit.
Really?
That's the good news. So the AUVs are actually climbing in this brand and we're just getting better and the brand will continue to get better. So if you look at it, there's three separate charts in the item 19 because we really want everyone to have a full system-wide perspective. So Cliff, you and I have been doing this a long time. I want to see people do proper due diligence. So we like to give them full transparency in what the system does. But then I also will require that they talk to a bunch of owners. They need to get into the weeds and hear about successes and challenges and what does a bad day look like. And so it's no illusion here. We want people to understand because for me, coming into a system with your eyes wide open is critically important. And that way, like people are so happy at Sky Zone because they had proper expectations, right? That's important. So the way it looks, so we have three charts because of the brand's been operating for 20 years. So one chart is just to put together like a modern park. Like what's a modern Sky Zone do? And the reason we do that is because there are stuff that's like not even doing membership models because they've been doing it for 20 years. They do it a different way. So, but the model that like the modern park is a very simple definition. It's any park that's at least 25,000 square feet. It has at least four or more party rooms. That's all it is. So what we're saying is Sky Zone's not going to open a park today that's less than 25,000 square feet. And we're not going to open a park with less than four party rooms because those are pivotal pieces of the business that make this thing work.
Okay.
So any park that has that, there's a lot of them. The average park in that is 2.9 million on the top line. So it's specifically 2,929,843 is what the average does. Now, the beauty of it is the median. Because we know, look at numbers, right? The median, let me give you this one, is 2,726,000.
Okay.
So the median is almost exactly at the average because the data set is consistent.
Right.
This is
you don't have huge gaps. Right.
Yeah, it's predictable. So in that, the average EBITDA is 887,583. So they run 30.4 on EBITDA. Now, I want you to know those are all franchise-owned and operated parks. Those don't involve corporate parks. Mm-hmm. And that's anything that's kind of like a modern, that would be more of an approvable Sky Zone. Now, because we want full transparency, in a second chart, we then list it by size quartiles so everyone can understand. Maybe you are in a situation where you're South Dakota and you want to open a single park in your local community. That makes sense. Maybe we do something smaller. So there is size quartiles that break down those ranges, but it's pretty consistent. You can actually add it right back in. It's pretty easy to track that back. And then we pull out corporate parks separate. So there's a whole corporate chart. Now, this is pretty interesting too, because if you guys study franchising, typically franchisees tend to be better operators than the franchisor. That's the typical story.
Yeah, not this example.
What's going on with SkyExam? Yeah, that's common, guys. Like the franchisor typically isn't as good as the franchisees. But in this case, you got an like a franchisor that is really good at operations. And that's important because they're basically testing, piloting everything in their store, their locations. When their parks are performing, it rolls out to the system. They have an FAC, which is a franchise advisory council. They have committees. They have like they're investing millions in innovations every year. Mm-hmm. We have a whole innovation committee that gets together and talks about innovations. So if you look at their corporate parks, they do on average 3.8 million on the top, and they're running, they don't go to EBITDA on those corporate parks, but 3.8 million is what they do on their gross revenue. So they're almost a million over. So the parks have huge potential, guys, in what you can do with them. But franchisees, I think you should know this too. Okay, when I walk people through this, I show this them too there. It includes the management infrastructure.
Okay.
And this is important to say. So with this 30.4% EBITDA, again, 887, that's after you pay a general manager. And these are well-paid GMs. These folks are running your operation day to day. It's not uncommon to see a GM with six-figure income. And so it's a GM, but not only do we have that, we have an assistant manager, because a GM needs a day off.
Right.
A GM needs to go on a vacation. So we have an assistant manager that is going to run the park when the GM's not there. And not only that, there's actually an events manager that runs the birthday party business and goes out into the community and drives all the community programs on behalf of the franchise owner. So you have this, you have three salaried general managers that run your park. And then the franchisee is working on KPIs and then like opening up more parks. So most of our franchisees are in the leases and they're on looking at sites. If you go into this franchisee with 25 parks doesn't even go to grand openings anymore. That's like they get to a point, Cliff, that they've
layers.
Got another infrastructure underneath the park. They have an infrastructure and then the park level infrastructure.
Wild. Michael, let's just quickly drill down on the EBITDA number. As many people know, EBITDA is not a GAAP metric, right? So there's some flexibility with brands. They can exclude things. What's not in that number that you're aware of that might be a big number?
It's the true definition of the word. So if people aren't like necessarily all that financially astute, it basically is the earnings before you factor in depreciation, taxes, depreciation, amortization. So what's not included, okay, so all the labor, all the management, debt's not included. Okay. So if you're going to leverage this investment, people leverage it all kinds of ways. So that varies too dramatically. So we don't include debt in it, obviously. We also don't include taxes because if you're crushing it, you're going to have to pay. Uncle Sam's going to need to get paid. But people's tax situations are entirely different. So we don't include sales taxes mm-hmm. in there, but not income tax. Yep. Because you got to pay your income tax. But also people probably understand depreciation benefit. This has a lot of depreciation benefit. You can write off, like, and you've got bonus depreciations now. There's a lot of cool stuff, but like equipment gets depreciated. So that's going to show up as an expense in the P&L, even though it's a write-off. Like you're taking earnings out of your business, so you pay less to Uncle Sam. So we're not like depreciation's not factored. So the true, it's like the actual income that the business is producing without its debt and without its taxes and without the benefits of depreciation.
That's awesome. So there's no playing with numbers here. Rent is in there. No labor's part. In there. Cost of goods for all the food you're producing is in there. Cost of goods of the socks. All of it's in there. The only thing that's not in there. Yeah. And it's interesting. And I want to echo what you just said. Michael is 100% correct. There's a lot of prospective franchisees that get upset when they find out that a $2 million debt service repayment is not in the earnings claim. Well, it's an EBITDA number. EBITDA was created in the 1980s during the whole LBO craze. And it was designed specifically to show the investor that the business can handle debt service repayment. So if you borrow $1 million, you're going to be paying $13,500 a month to the SBA, right? 160 something thousand a year. You need to borrow $2 million, double the number over, of course, over a 10-year period at current prime plus rates. So like, don't be upset that the debt service payment's not in the number. They're giving you an EBITDA number. That's the purpose of the number. Can it handle a $200,000-$300,000 debt payment to the bank? And the answer is unequivocally yes. This is a very impressive bottom line number. Michael, very impressive brand. It's really rare that, you know, someone in our industry where it's like, I want to be involved, right? I know you have to have said this to yourself. You may own one. I don't know. Are you in this?
I unfortunately can't get in it in my market, right? Because I'm in an area that's like, it's high. Everything's sold out.
Yeah. You looked into it though, because this is something that you could see in your portfolio. Like you'd put your money in it.
I would absolutely. And the people that I'm working with are a lot smarter than me, Cliff. Now, there's also this risk piece that I'm going to touch real quick because I know we're hitting.
Go ahead. Yeah, you mentioned it. And I'd like to talk about it.
The biggest thing people come and ask me about is they're like, these are investors. So they're like, well, hold on. What about is there injuries that are happening in this park? And what is my personal liability to that? So this is one of the best things I think that SkyZone has. I think it's the single most attractive benefit that a franchise owner has is they have what's called the Master Insurance Program. Okay. And to my knowledge, it's the only program that's out there in any franchise system like this. But what happened is they went out and formed a group insurance program for the benefit of the entire franchise system. And that way we don't have any risk of ever being dropped by an insurance carrier, mm-hmm. right? And what happens in this business is there's high deductibles that you're gonna be subject to. So as an independent trampoline park owner, you get a couple of incidents in your park and it literally can put you out of business because the deductibles are really high. So what SkyZone did is they created a self-insured component in the master insurance program. So what they did, there's a group insurance. So think about getting medical insurance. And instead of doing an individual policy, you're going to go and do a group policy that lowers premiums, spreads the risk over a lot of different locations. Mm-hmm. But also SkyZone's been tracking safety record for 20 years. So we know attractions like where we're seeing. So all of our attractions are designed to be very, very safe and they're modular. So we can pull them out and put them in really easily to keep the park fresh and keep it exciting and always be innovating.
Okay.
But we track the safety. Now, what happens is the insurance policies come on down. And now if there's an incident, there's a third party that handles it soup to nuts for the franchise owner. They don't even have to. It literally fills out an incident report. Goes to third party calls the next morning. How is Billy feeling? They start to de-escalate it. If it ever goes into anything legal, they take care of it through the insurance policy. And then what happens on that premium, it gets self-insured by SkyZone. So the franchise owners can continue to operate without ever being concerned about risk in this business. That's the beauty. All they do is run a good operation. They have to make sure their cameras are on because we have mm-hmm. cameras in the whole park. You wouldn't see them as a guest, but there's cameras. And they have to make sure they're getting waivers because waivers are critical when people come in the door. And then if an incident does occur, they fill out an incident report. And that's all that has to happen. SkyZone's got a system for everything else. And there's never going to be like a need to be concerned about personal liability because there's a complete insurance program around that. And you're never going to have an issue being dropped. Now, what this sets up, though, Cliff, is there's actually a barrier to entry here. Mm-hmm. That's why you don't see a lot of mom pops right. in this. They can't
compete.
You can't be a mom pop. So it's one of these businesses that, like, how do you insulate? Like, there's a gigantic barrier to entry here. So SkyZone is in some coveted air, biggest brand in the space. Everyone recognizes the brand. It's doing really well. Great leadership team. But you also have some barriers that are going to protect you as you start scaling it out.
Very cool. I love that. That was smart. You could tell there's a lot of really intelligent people behind the scenes modeling this out, hedging risk, being able to scale, right? Sustain the franchisees, because you're right. You have some incidents, you're going out of business. You just don't know it yet. Really, really appreciate you being here, Michael. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Cliff. It was a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you feature today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FranOcity.com. We love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.